We have a number of illustrations and, I think, expressions which illustrate a lack of certainty, a lack of confidence. As we're speaking with people, an individual may say to us, "I think." Or we may hear, "I believe." A person may say, "I'm almost sure of this," or "it's probably true," or "this is likely." How many times, though, as we go through life, does someone say to us, "I know this to be a fact. There is no doubt whatsoever. This is 100% true, and it is in my mind. I'm so confident about it. It is so 100% certain, I'll literally stake my life on it." I don't hear that too often. Generally, people will leave themselves a little out. In many places today, the resurrection of Christ was on the minds of many. On this so-called Easter Sunday, there were a number of people who dressed up in new clothes. Others who perhaps hardly ever go to worship decided that they were going to come out today and worship God. In at least a few homes, children received Easter baskets. Out of all the people this day who decided that they were going to spend some time thinking about the resurrection of Christ or honoring the Lord for the resurrection, I wonder how many of those individuals would say, "I know. I am 100% convinced, based on sufficient evidence, that Jesus Christ was really raised from the dead." If we could talk to all the people who came out today, I suspect that there would be a number of people, like the majority, who would say, "Well, Jesus was probably raised." Or some would say, "Jesus was possibly raised from the dead." There would probably be some people who would have a high level of confidence in the resurrection of Christ. There might be a few who would say, "I'm almost 100% certain, I'm 99.999% certain that the resurrection of Christ is true." How many people, though, this day, could we find who would stake their life and every possession, the life of their family, stake everything that they have access to, on the fact that Jesus Christ was really raised from the dead? You see, when it comes to 100% certainty, that's where a lot of people start to get squeamish and they say, "Well, I can't quite go that far. I'm pretty positive, I'm pretty certain, but I cannot say with 100% certainty." When we think about a lack of 100% certainty, sometimes we think about the legal system. A witness may ascend to the witness chair. And the witness says, "I am 100% certain it was him or her or them," or whatever fact it might be. And then the attorney gets up. And the attorney begins to ask a series of questions. And by the time that interrogation is through, what happens to the witness? "Well, I'm not 100%. That often happens. Tonight we want to think about the word "no." K-N-O-W. Our launching point is going to come from the 18th chapter of Exodus. Now, back in Exodus chapter 17, we have some information that we've looked at in previous lessons. God's people receive water from a rock. We also have, as far as another major Old Testament account, a battle with the Amalekites. And that, of course, is where Moses held up his hands and Israel won when the hands were up. Israel began to lose when the hands were down. In Exodus 18, though, things began to change. In Exodus 18, we have some information about a father-in-law. And the name of this father-in-law was Jethro. If Jethro doesn't ring any bells with you, he, of course, was the father-in-law for Moses. And we have in Exodus chapter 18 some information about him being a priest. Jethro was a priest in the land of Midian. In Exodus 18, the text tells us that this priest of Midian had heard about the God of Moses. Exodus 18 verse 1 says that he had heard all, A-L-L, that God had done for his people. As you continue to read through the account, Moses' family, some of his family was with his father-in-law and that family, and the father-in-law comes out to meet Moses in the wilderness, Exodus chapter 18, verse 5. Moses greets his father-in-law there in the wilderness. And then Moses begins to go into some detail about what God had done for his people. If you found Exodus 18, and I know several have done that, I appreciate that, let's take a look at Exodus chapter 18, verse 8. "And Moses told his father-in-law all that Jehovah had done unto Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how Jehovah delivered them." Jethro hears that information. According to Exodus chapter 18, verse 9, he rejoices. In verse 10, Jethro, this priest from Midian, blesses the God of Israel. And then we get to the key point, Exodus chapter 18, verse 11. Here's what this man says. He says, "Now I know." Now this is this priest. He says, "Now I know." What do I know? "Now I know that Jehovah is greater than all gods. Yea, in the thing wherein they have dealt proudly against them." Jethro was provided sufficient information about the God of the Bible, and he says, now I am absolutely convinced. I am 100% certain about this God. He didn't come to Moses and say, well, I'm leaning towards the conclusion that your God is the most powerful one. He's the only true God. He didn't say, I suspect that, or he's most likely the greatest of all. He says, now I know. There is no doubt whatsoever. There is no question. There is no dispute. This is an absolute certainty. There are occasions in life where we would like someone to say, I know for certain. All too often, though, we sometimes receive possibilities and probabilities. You go to the doc. And a person says to the doc, am I going to recover? Maybe. That's probably not the answer that we want. Is there a cure for me? Possibly. Don't tell me that, doc. I want to hear that, yes, there is a cure. And I want to hear that it's an easy cure. A child is concerned about something, comes to mom and dad for consolation, and they want to hear that it's going to be okay. But imagine a parent who says, well, it's probably going to be okay. That has an impact on the child, a negative impact. The police officer who responded to a break-in today, he said the likelihood is less than 50% that the perpetrator or perpetrators are going to be found. We want certainty, but oftentimes in life it's not there. They're rare in the world. When it comes to the spiritual realm, though, interesting, God says there are some things which are absolutely certain, 100% guaranteed, that we can know beyond any doubt that these things are true. You might say we have some guarantees from God, and here are some. First one on my list is coming from Matthew chapter 24, verse 12. It is here that Jesus said we can know, there's that word again, we can know that the time of his final return is uncertain. We can say without any doubt whatsoever that the time of the Lord's return is unknown. Now, Jesus did indicate that we can have some idea as far as what the condition of the world is going to be like. He said that when he returns, it's going to be like the time of Noah, and we know what that was like. When the Lord returns, there's going to be great wickedness upon the earth, but that's been true for a number of years and certainly will likely continue to be. But Jesus is making the point in Matthew 24:12, any claim about the season, the year, the era, the month, the week for his return. He says, you can know with absolute certainty that anytime somebody comes along and says, here's when Jesus is going to return, or we can tell that he's going to return soon, we're in the right season, we're in the final days, suggesting by that implying that we don't have much longer, he says, you're always going to have someone who's in error. We can know that for sure. Jesus was so emphatic in this teaching, he repeated it in the next chapter, Matthew 25, verse 13. Unless it's settled, tomorrow I need to show up for jury duty. Most are aware that when it comes to a court case, some of them are resolved when it comes to reasonable doubt. A lot of juries have been assembled and they reach a verdict because that conclusion is likely, it is probable, it more than likely happened that way. There's the preponderance of the evidence, there's a preponderance of guilt. But when we deal with the spiritual realm, we're dealing with something much, much different. John 7 and John 8. In John chapter 7, verse 17, Jesus said, if anyone wants to know the Father's will, and with that knowing, there's also the doing. He said, you can know the truth about me. We can know the truth about Jesus Christ. Now, this verse gets a lot less attention than what we have in John chapter 8, verse 32. But it is, nevertheless, just as important. When it comes to spiritual matters, Jesus affirmed that we can know what's true, in this case, true about him, and we can also know what's not true. We can know if Jesus really lived. We can know if Jesus really died. We can know if he was crucified. We can know there's sufficient evidence to conclude whether or not Jesus returned from the dead. And we can know that Jesus ascended into heaven. Someone says, well, we weren't there. That's true. But it's also the case that evidence comes in various forms. We do not have to personally witness an event to know beyond any doubt that it's true. Along with John 7, verse 17, is the information in John 8, 32, a very well-known text. Jesus here said, and ye shall know the truth. And not only Jesus said, can you know the truth? He said, the truth will make you free. We can guess about a lot of things in this life, and maybe we're right, maybe we're wrong. As we go through this life, we can have partial knowledge about a lot of different topics. But when it comes to spiritual matters, John 7:17, John 8, verse 32, Jesus said, you can know the truth. You can be absolutely confident. We've been given sufficient information and evidence, and we can be 100% confident that we have what is right. Now, that idea is offensive to a lot of people. It's been offensive to a lot of people for the last 20, 30, 50 years. But we now live in a culture where it's even more offensive. In fact, every passing day, it seems like there are more and more people who are offended at the idea that we can know something for sure. That's almost anathema in modern culture. Some say, well, I believe this is right, or I am pretty sure this is right because I feel it in my heart. Ever deal with somebody like that? Or another individual comes along and they say, well, I know this is right because we've always done it this way. We talked a little bit about that in our last Wednesday night class. Others assert they know what's right because that's how the majority lives. Everybody else is doing it, so we know that must be the way to go. And then there are those, they base their conclusion. They say, we know this is right, we know this is wrong, because they dislike someone. You may remember from Jesus, again pulling from John 8, but moving down a little bit, John chapter 8, verse 52. There were some people who said, we know Jesus has a demon. Well, how did they know Jesus had a demon? There was no proof, there was no evidence. They simply disliked the Lord. And because they hated Jesus, they said, we know this is true. But that was not true. And then in that next chapter, John chapter 9, verse 24, there were some people who said, we know Jesus is a sinner. They didn't know that. They drew that conclusion. They felt that way because they didn't like what Jesus was doing. Knowing the truth is a little bit like reading a ruler. If you have a ruler, unless someone has messed with it, or not produced it, not fabricated in the proper way, a ruler is an absolute standard. An inch is an inch. A fraction of an inch is a fraction of an inch. And if that ruler is read properly, we have the right measurement. We have the truth. A true inch cannot mean one thing to one person and another thing to another individual. When we know God, if we truly know God, we have a good heart, we obey God. Knowledge and obedience go hand in hand as we look at the scriptures. In fact, in John chapter 8, verse 55, Jesus said, you've not known him. There were some people who said, oh, we know God. And Jesus comes along and says, you're wrong. You think you know God? He said, you're in error. He said, I know him. And then he went on to say, and if I should say I know him not, I shall be like unto you a liar. And then that verse concludes, John 8, 55, I know him and I keep his word. Notice the connection. I know God, and not I probably know him or I likely know him. I know him, absolute certainty. And with that, I keep his word. True knowledge, when it comes to the spiritual realm, is based on doing. In fact, a little later in the book of John, chapter 13, verse 17, the Lord said, we are blessed if we do what we know to be right. When you look at John, the Gospel of John, and especially the book of 1 John and even a few times in 2 John, you begin to find that John was a writer who used the word know again and again and again. We're not the first people. We're not the first generation to live in a world where people have wrong ideas about knowledge. Still thinking about John a little bit. Back in the book of John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, that John. In John chapter 10, verse 4, Jesus said, the people of God, the sheep, they know the voice of the shepherd. I've read about an occasion or two where there was a man who thought he'd fool the sheep. Went out and talked to a shepherd and said, tell you what, he said, let me dress up like you. I'll pretend to be you and I'll give the sheep commands and we'll see how well they follow me. Well, the shepherds I read about sort of smiled because they knew it was going to happen. Shepherd was willing to give the clothing, willing to give the staff to the fellow who wanted to be the pretender, and the pretender got all dressed up and tried to imitate the voice of the shepherd, and the sheep didn't follow. Sheep are generally considered to be dumb animals, but you know there's one thing that they understand. They know the voice of the shepherd. And Jesus said, if you are my people, you know my voice. Not, well, maybe that's the Lord, or possibly that's the Lord, or likely that's the Lord. He said, you know my voice. Why? Because we have immersed ourselves with the knowledge of Christ. Christians need to know the voice of Jesus Christ. And if we know the Lord's voice, we'll only do what Christ has authorized. Paul talked about that in the book of Colossians, chapter 3, verse 17. He said, whatsoever you do, in word or in deed, do all in the name, do all by the authority of Jesus Christ. Don't deviate from the Lord if you know his voice. The saved know the way. John 14, verse 4, and they follow it. Knowing what's right means that we do what's right. Knowing what's right means that we insist on sticking with the truth. If we can't support Bible practices with book, chapter, and verse, they need to be scrapped. Knowing God means that we seek to be obedient to Him in every aspect of life. In the same chapter, after John chapter 10, verse 4, you have some information in John chapter 10 and verse 5. And this is one of the verses that I want to make sure that we read. John chapter 10, verse 5. You find, as I said, throughout the book of John, no, and sometimes you can go from almost one right after another. But in John 10, 5, he says, "And a stranger will they not follow." That's the Lord's sheep. "But will flee from him." Why? He gives the answer. He said, "For they know not the voice of strangers." I am amazed in our day and time, and this might not be something that you follow. Generally, it's something that a lot of preachers will follow. But I am amazed at the number of congregations in our generation which are swept away by false doctrine. There are Christians, some of whom are preachers, sometimes veteran preachers, elders, deacons, Bible class teachers, people who know better. And they should know the voice of the shepherd and not know the voice of strangers. But Jesus said, look, you're not always doing that. The sheep are sometimes smarter than you are, the literal sheep, the animals. If we know the voice of Christ, we know the voice of strangers. And we know that we leave that alone. Paul, as he wrote to the congregation, or as he talked to the congregation at Ephesus, Acts chapter 20, verse 29, he said, "I know." Not "I suspect," not "possibly," but he said, "I know. And I'm giving you advance warning that false teachers are going to arise from within the congregation. And they're going to lead people astray. They're going to have people following after them." True sheep are not willing to know the voice of false shepherds. One of our songs talks about the voices from the world that call. And there are oftentimes many voices that call. But we need to know and listen for the shepherd's voice. When it comes to the word know, we begin to learn some other things. God wants the world to know that we're Christians. Did you know that? John chapter 13, verse 35. Jesus said, when you go out the door, when people see you in the world, I want them to know, not to think, not to suspect, not to wonder if you're a Christian, not to say, well, that person seems to be a religious person. Jesus said, I want them to know 100% that you are a disciple of mine by your life. Not long ago, within the last year, someone shared with me a very interesting perspective on Acts chapter 19, verse 15. It was a brand new thought for me, and I think a good thought. In Acts 19, 15, you had this evil spirit. And the situation is Sceva and his sons, they were trying to cast out a demonic. And the evil spirit says this. He says, Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but Sceva, who are you? As the person commented on that particular text, they asked this question, does the devil know your name? Ever thought about that question? Does the devil know your name? Do we try to live the Christian life in such a way where Satan knows who we are? Have we made such a commitment to Christ, like Paul had? The devil knows who you are, Paul. He certainly knew who Jesus was, but does he know our name? As Christians, there's some things that we need to know. 100% certainty. We need to know that the unrighteous will not be among the saved. Paul told that to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9. Now, if we go to a funeral, we hear some people who don't know that. They will take the most irreligious man or woman or group of people in the community and say, oh, God's a loving God and the people are enjoying the glory of Jesus right now. That's a lie. Paul said the unrighteous, the people who are outside of Christ, they will be excluded from the kingdom of heaven. And he told the Corinthians, you need to know that. We need to know. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58, that our labor is not in vain. Have you ever done something for the cause of Christ and you wonder, is it doing any good? Is there any value? Does it matter? Should I continue? Paul told the Corinthians, I want you to know that what you do for the sake of Christ is not in vain. You continue. You know, beyond any doubt, that your contributions are valuable. We need to know. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1, that our bodies are wearing out. Now, the older you get, maybe you need fewer reminders. But Paul told the Corinthians in the second letter, you need to know that you come with an expiration date. You need to know that one day you're going to leave this life and make appropriate preparations. We need to know that there's proper behavior for the church. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, not everybody believes that or teaches that. But Paul says you need to know that. We need to know that faith without works is dead. James 2, verse 20. James said not only faith without works is dead, he said we can know that. We need to know that friendship with the world is enmity with God. That's what James said too. James 4, verse 4. We need to know that we have no idea what a new day may bring. James 4, verse 14. Did anybody know that the building was going to be broken into, likely, within the last 24 hours? No. We don't know what a day is going to bring. We can know that we know God if we keep his commandments. 1 John 2, verse 3. And then John gives us this jewel in 1 John 5, verse 13. He says, we can know that we have eternal life. And that's not cockiness, that's not arrogance. But simply by doing what God says, John says, we can know. We don't have to wonder if we're saved or if we're lost. We don't have to suspect, well, I'm probably more over here or we're more over there. John said, we can know. God says we can know many different truths, even though we live in a world, a time, where a lot of people say, oh, you can't know anything, or you can't know very much. When we are 100% convinced of something, then that's a good time to take action. But out of all the items that we looked at tonight, and there were several, let me again highlight the one from Acts chapter 19. Does Satan know who we are because we are a faithful Christian? That's an interesting question. If he does, we need to make sure that we know the voice of the shepherd and we stick with it. Does Satan know our name? In some respects, that's a good thing, because he's after us since we're on the side of Christ. Make sure the devil knows your name. Make sure that you're listening to the voice of the shepherd, that you've submitted to that voice, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, and you continue to know the voice of Christ every single day. Tonight, do we know what's right? And are we doing what's right? If not, and we can help you do what you now know to be right, will you let us become aware of your need and how we can assist you as we stand and sing the selected song?